You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Dr. Ignacin Mather. Thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you, Brainerd.
Now, Dr. Ignacin, I know this is a pen name you've used for your book, The 30-Day Media Diet, which we're going to be discussing, and perhaps you should say a little bit why you used a pen name. I know you wanted it to be about the content of the book, but was this the first time you used that pen name, and why?
You know, it's interesting. It's an interesting question. I think part of the reason why I decided to use a pen name, there were actually two reasons, and one of which actually pertains to the diet itself. I think that the diet, what it's trying to do is trying to take this approach to media in all its forms, in a limited fashion, with a little bit of more discernment. And when it comes to authors, when it comes to literature itself, as you know, it has become a part of the whole commoditized society that we live in. So when an author is promoted, sometimes I see that the ideas are lost and there's an inordinate focus on the person. And I thought it was important to stay true to the idea itself and not to the story of the person, which can be complex. And it could be interesting in its own way. I wouldn't say that's my case. So that's reason number one. In literature, this has happened before, as you know. I happen to be a fan of Portuguese writer Fernando Pessoa. He very famously wrote articles and did books, actually, under characters. And this was very much true for the 30-day media diet. The author needed to be a diet guru. And that would allow me some flexibility in tone if I were to write it myself. It would probably be you'll have to use a lot of footnotes, you'll have to back up your ideas in a more substantive manner. But doing it this way, it allowed me the reach and flexibility to do it fast and to try to reach a wider audience.
So let's talk a little bit about the book. The book is called The 30-Day Media Diet, and it's about exactly that, right? It's about kind of fasting or getting off of our typical media diet and getting into 30 days of something very specific that you describe, which we could get into the details of, but just to look at it generally and what this diet is supposed to impart, how would you sum that up? Because we're talking, to me it feels like, you know, something very enriching and important for everyone to do, especially in this day and age. I mean, it's speaking to technology, but what do you feel the media diet will deliver to the dieter, essentially?
Sure, absolutely. So this, you know, definitely based on my firsthand experience in our generation. As you know, we've grown up with TV and with the media being a complete part of our lives, and it's something that we take for granted. It's something that that dynamic, we've never really questioned it. However, since the internet started becoming so prominent in our lives, there's been a further change, I believe. And you feel as if reality really encroaches upon your life, and it's thinking for you. And, you know, I've been a writer, I've been a fan of literature, and I realized there was a disconnect between the things that I was reading or the movies that I was watching and the reality and the way that people perceive the problems of today. So I did this diet for years. I did different type of iterations. It really didn't come together, like it's presented in the book. That was a really good effort in trying to, do a combination of proverbs, poems, a central book that is read in each of the weeks. So it's four books for the duration of the month, and then a movie day, which can be difficult, although some of them are available online, actually most of them. But it was because we're a visual generation. So the idea is that when you disconnect from media, from your phone, you take a break, because we really can't disconnect. I think the media out there is so loud that we will find out anyways what is going on. This is definitely my point of view and what I experience. And then you become curatorial in your approach to how we receive reality. so that, you know, there's a sense of a context that comes from somewhere else. In this case, literature, film, poems, and fables, which is how you start from your breakfast. Your lunch would be composed of the main nutrients.
Okay. So before you go into that, so the way the diet begins, which I really love, it's broken into breakfast and lunch and also a section on preparing for the diet, which you've talked about a little bit. But this is a diet that's prescribing films and texts over the course of 30 days. Kind of remove us from the media that you were saying, but it's also to impart a certain way of thinking. I mean, you can begin again. I don't want to interrupt what you were about to say, but I just wanted to make clear that that's what's happening, and you were about to talk about the first day, right?
Yes, in a way, but very lightly. You try not to put upon a type of thinking or an idea, but rather more raise questions. And yes, there is a deliberate attempt to foster some kind of train of thought, that's for sure. But it is a very positive, I believe, process. And I think the first week, if you want to go to the general specifics, the first week is about to understand how the itself, you know, how our reality, so to speak, became this way. And I think looking at World War II at that period in time is very important, which is what happens in the diet. And the selection, obviously, of books and movies for this process is very difficult because there's so much good material out there. I would say even impossible in a way, which is why I encourage people after a 30-day media diet to do their own diet combination. But it is very specific. It was it took a lot of effort to try to create a train of thought that would try to grab so much in. So the first week is world. The second week is about the individual crisis.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but just by first week world, what's happening is people are given, just so everybody understands, they'll be linked to your book so people can look more into it or buy it. But essentially, what's being prescribed for meals on these days is reading and watching movies largely, right? To gain a particular point of view.
That is correct. Yes, absolutely.
And so you were saying the first week
the first week, it's more like an overall assessment of the 20th century, I would say, and I pick a specific book for that I believe does the job really well. There are others. But the one that I picked up is by a Spanish philosopher, José Ortega y Gasset, which is The Rebellion of the Masses. But he identifies a phenomenon where there was a change of guard, where the masses took over, and how that process came along. It's a very interesting book. I thought it was important to understand, or maybe there's other people that I can mention, like Eric Hoffer has great books on the subject, some other people do. But that book is very interesting, is very fun, is very timely. It was written in 1929, published in 1930. But it's a good introduction to the process of the world being led by mass thought, by the masses, as opposed to the individual or individual elites or cases. Just the masses took over.
Right. I mean that's such an interesting book. To choose, and again, that's lunch. We'll talk about dinner in this first week too, or some of them. But that book is also a very unusual one to choose, as you're saying. That's a Spanish philosopher. You're also introducing certainly U.S. readers to European literature that we certainly didn't grow up with. If you were in Spain, you grew up with that book, but most likely. But here, that's a book that probably most people don't know.
That is absolutely correct, and that was definitely deliberate as well, precisely because of that reason. And I think that there was so much information, so many good books reading at the time, and proliferation probably wasn't as available then. Actually, it wasn't as available then as it is now. And he himself, particularly, I don't think he's talked about that much in academia here in the States. Eric Hoffer, for example, which I mentioned before, was another choice, but I didn't realize it's good to see from the outside to what's going on, the developments that were going on in Europe, since it dragged the U.S. eventually into what was going on over there, you know, World War II, and that changed the foundation of our modern world. So to understand what happened and how the U.S. was dragged into this, eventually the Cold War, that provides the context of what was about to occur in the world, at least in my way of seeing it. I mean, as you know, it's a very complex process what happened in the 20th century. There are many good books on the subject. So I needed to try to economize and pick something that was effective and that would set the stage to, you know, to see how the century would develop and eventually lead us to where we are now.
Right. I love that. So essentially the first week, there's breakfast, which is often a quote. There's lunch, which is the continued reading of the book we're discussing. And then there's a film every night that we're asked to watch. And you give links to them on YouTube, although some of them are on Netflix and other places if the reader has that. The films that I wanted to discuss were, or maybe just why you chose them, was the first one, Modern Times, and also Day 3, The Triumph of the Will, directed by Leni Riefenstahl.
That's right. I mean, I think that as you, since I'm very familiar with the book, as you read this book, and I call this film fiber, you know, in the true subject matter of a diet. I think that you have those ideas, and when you watch them visually, you watch that century unfold, you sort of understand what Ortega is telling you that is about to happen or what can happen. Is the concrete imagery of a revolt of the masses, which is exactly what he was talking about, as portrayed with, you know, Leni Riefenstahl's very famous documentary. There are others. Modern Times, I think, captures the gist of the world moving very fast. And there are other books, really. The process of World War II, by the way, it's told chronologically during that week in a very specific way, so that you can see the before, the during, and then the after. And that's why you have Judgment at Nuremberg later on, and before that you have René Clément, Forbidden Games, which I think is an interesting, you know, point of view of World War II from the vantage point of children. So it's a very interesting, as you know, if you've seen what the diet prescribes for each day. If you were to do it, you know, all together, which I have, it makes for a very interesting set of emotions and ideas taking over your head, your mind, and
That's why I love what you're doing, and this whole interview series is largely, I interview artists and architects and curators and writers, and it seems to me that this book, The Media Diet, is in a way something that they should all read, but also, you know, especially for artists, for writers, in terms of just context for what we're all drawing on, or even to kind of recontextualize what they're already doing. It seems an essential text, but I imagine you didn't mean it just for creative types or artists or curators. You meant it for everyone?
Yes. I mean, I knew that in the long run, I wanted intellectuals and people who seeking some sort of, this is interesting, now I'm going to have my own ideas. And it's basically the motto of the motto of the diet, treat your mind like a museum, not a warehouse, which I think is lost. It's easy for us to be lost on that very basic way of treating our minds.
Let's talk about that a little bit. Treat your mind like a museum, not a warehouse, right?
Is a
motto in the back of the book. And so,
yes.
Yeah, let's get into that a little bit. What would be treating your mind like a warehouse? Well, that's what most of us are doing, in fact, right?
Yeah, we are. And I think it starts with the way that we receive advertisement and our relationship with ads, which I call fatty adsits, you know. What happens is that we are selecting a television show, and then we have segments of commercials, which we know that's the way it works. However, we didn't choose the way those commercials were done, what the content of the commercials are. And receiving them, you know, seriously every day, it does create some sort of does have an effect on our minds. We are capturing images, we're capturing, you know, highly specific content that was done, so you know we can become patrons of the products that they're offering. So I'm not saying that they shouldn't, you know, people have to sell their products, but we have to be careful about what we receive in our minds and keep it clean and neat. But not just ads, I would say even in shows, movies, etc. There are opinions, agendas. There's a lot of things. So we have to try to curate as much as we can, just for the sake of keeping our thoughts in a healthy process. You know, to control the process of information that flows inside, as opposed to just
This is kind of the ultimate revolution, isn't it? I mean, it's the idea of reversing the media diet that we're on, which seems almost impossible, but maybe
yes.
It's not. You know, when I talk with different people and who are creating graduate programs for artists and critical thinking and other things, they often talk about how impossible, nearly impossible it is to discern the truth, you know, to find out what's really going on. And beside the fact that a lot of people aren't really looking that much, even when you do look, it's often very difficult nowadays, especially with the deluge of media we're getting around us, which, you know, adds to our thinking and our ability to research in a variety of ways, it seems. So this seems, if I'm not overreaching in a way, part of a kind of a revolution of a way of thinking. It would be nice to think that we could, that this book would take hold so much, and, you know, maybe we just have to be happy that it's a minority that will enjoy this, that it will take hold so much that we will check our phones less and not be using social media or reading what's on Facebook as much. I mean, is that correct, or am I, like, is that
too? No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I knew and I thought that, you know, wow, what kind of impact, if any, I will have. But I'll say this, though, to your point. Yes, the idea was to try to just get the concept of curating your mind, which I think everybody responds so favorably, everybody that I talk. The thing is that we take for granted the things that we receive. I know people, you know, right now see Netflix series, and some are really well done from the point of view of a genre or the craft. However, those series as well, it's a choice that I make not to watch certain, them, and instead, you know, go to our local cinema and try to, build up my knowledge on filmmakers that I would probably favor, you know, Hitchcock or Howard Hawks. Who knows? Because you don't have time. You know, there's so much content and things that are interesting. So you make a conscious choice to have contact, to bring different things into your mind. Into the way your mind is set, to enrich the way that you would think about the problems that we have today, but also about your particular possibilities, you know, depending on how intellectual you are. I mean, it's definitely not going to be for everybody. But if I would just, you know, go and watch series after series, that's going to take all my evening, for sure. So you make a choice not to watch it, not because it's bad, but because I prefer to, you know, endorse, you know, François Truffaut's filmography, which is, you know, very, very long and there's so many films to watch or, you know, books to read. And I think once you know that, you have no choice but to curate. So when you start curating, then the whole process changes. The whole way that you interact with your reality changes. And it becomes healthier, though, because we don't get, impressed into this, frenetic whirlpools, which is what I call, I see a lot of otherwise intelligent people around me that they feel so depressed about the way that the media puts a problem or another. And then they lose sight of other problems that we should probably, be thinking of, like the Earth, you know, the way that our resources are being spent, maybe cradle-to-cradle design. You know, there's a lot of things that go into it. So, yeah, that was the idea.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And I hope a lot of listeners get reach out and try this, because there's also the issue of time management, right? There's all these,
yes,
as you say, there's a choice. We make all these choices. And then there's also, when do we do these things? Do we watch films at night? Do we read during the day? And if we read during the day, when do we read during the day? I know myself, I keep ordering books and books and books, and I don't read them all, you know? So there's also the issue of...
Same here.
I'm like, when are we going to read them, right? Seems to be part of the idea of breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Right, so you would trade in a Netflix show so you can read something. And, you know, now obviously, you know, to try to avoid some kind of exaggerated approach to this. It's more actually totally the opposite matter of being aware of the possibilities or the lack of possibilities during the day, because we have day jobs and you want to read certain things. You know, for example, right now I'm about to start Herodotus, the histories. And, you know, it's been taking me 39 years to even open that book, and yet it contains, you know, very important information that I want to know. So, it's that kind of thinking, and when you take it into your life, and you do your own diet according to what you want and the things that you think that intellectually will be more fruitful for you.
It's really fascinating to talk to you about this. I'm so glad you wrote this book. I haven't done the media diet yet, but I plan on doing it this summer. That's my summer project. And,
oh, that's great.
And before I ask you the last question about what you're reading, which you may have answered, is there anything else you want to say about the book that I didn't ask about that you want to mention?
What I would say is that the main idea was to try to reach out to potential intellectuals, people who are concerned about how society it's become, or, you know, apparently has become so destructive. And it's actually not. There are so many positive things out there that we should be focusing on. And yes, we should watch the political process and see how that is unfolding. But I think the world needs thinkers with a clear head, with a lot of rich context that it's outside of our modern times. I think we've become way too modern-centric. And we need to fight, or, you know, just push a little bit against that. And I think if that happens, if there is a sort of a conscious effort from people in universities right now not to partake too much on the dynamics of the today, you know, today's world, and we reach into the past, then we will have the vision for the future. I think that was the central idea, was that people then will come with their own media diets, and that's how I end the diet. And I hope there's like 30 or 40 versions of this book out there. All with different, you know, types of leanings. So, you know, good luck, Godspeed, I would say, to anybody who's listening who wants to clear their minds. It's definitely welcome you guys to join me in this pushback.
And do you plan on doing more books like this in the future?
I am actually finishing up an essay. I'm going to do a series of essays that I'm going to call them Arithmetics. And I am actually going to launch that under my own name. And this is a series of five different essays where I'm like exploring these subjects, but more from a scholarly point of view. I would say, you know, they're more like the fruit of years of just reading and doing things. I also have fiction books that might come out, but yeah, no, I'll keep you posted.
Okay, I'd like that. And I know that this book is say this about it. It came out in 2016. It was self-published, so there.
Right.
It's already been out there, and people are reacting to it. Have you had any particular reactions or conversations with people since the publishing
yes.
of this book that are memorable?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Actually, as a matter of fact, it was selected as part of a Maison 10 here in New York City, part of the collection, which was really, really an honor. So they have a curatorial approach to fashion design arts. In books, and they select 10 books for 10 weeks. So it just wrapped up actually last week, but I think you guys, people can still go there and purchase it. I had a you know, great, I'm not sure if you were exposed to it that way, but that was one of my, the first, you know, there was a lot of people that were interested in it, and receive other types of, you know, people that I interact in the daily basis in New York City. Generally, when they hear about the idea, they've been doing it on their own. Some of the movies weren't available when I published it, but now New York Public Library made some of these available online, streaming-wise. So I think all the movies are available now, streaming, and majority of them on YouTube. But as you know, I didn't have any social media campaign behind it. I've been in touch with two people that were interested in launching it. But of course, there's a matter of money, and And that's okay. You know, the book will pick up if it has to, and I hope it would be, because I'm trying to just contribute to people. And by the way, Maison Tense, if you guys buy the book over there, everything goes to charity. So that's
okay. Very good. Yeah, I'll put that address in here as well, because that's where I bought it in New York. It's a
wonderful
store where so much of percentage of everything goes to charity, which is wonderful. So
yeah, and mine is all of it, actually. I'm not, you know, I totally support what Tom, Carson, and Henry are doing that way. They're great people.
Well, yours is 100% of it goes to charity.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Wonderful. That's really wonderful. So let me ask you what you're reading at the moment.
Right now, I'm actually about to finish Leonora Carrington's collected stories, which I wanted to read in a long time. San Francisco City Lights Bookstore came out with an edition a couple of years ago, 2 years ago. She's a really spainter, and she wrote some really weird stories, and having fun with that. So, you know, read a couple of books at a time. So, but that's the one that I'm about to finish right now.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, Brainerd, for having me. Appreciate it.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.